You're listening to episode 3 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Cheng.
Am I doing this right?
Hi, I'm your host, Yin Cheng, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence. Hi guys, this is a temporary placeholder for the perfect sponsor. I'm excited to partner with a company that I genuinely believe in and stand firmly by their message and products. If you're interested in sponsoring my show and you believe your brand can truly be of value and of service to me and my tribe, reach out to me on my contact page at 88cupsoftea.com and let's chat. Hi everyone, today we have the awesome Joe Nussbaum with us today, and he's my director from Walt Disney's feature film Prom, and he was an absolute honor and pleasure to work with. So hi Joe,
Hi Yin. Thank you, thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you so much. I know you're super busy, so I appreciate it, and I know our listeners are so grateful to have you too. When did you realize you had a love for filmmaking?
Wow, very early on, for sure. When I was a little kid, I loved putting on little shows for my family and acting things out with friends. And I would run around the house dressing up in costume and stuff, making little TV shows and movies in my own world with action figures and toys and stuff like that. And then when I was 12, I got a video camera, and that was when it all sort of clicked and translated to, you know, not just acting stuff out, but putting stuff on tape and doing little movies with my friends on weekends. And again, running around in costume, but actually hitting record and acting it out. And from then on, I just knew that's what I wanted to do. So all through junior high and high school, I would always basically take any opportunity to do like a video production course or any kind of extracurricular I could do, and just everything that was in any way related to filmmaking or TV production or anything like that, that I could get my hands on.
So how about the school? What led you to choose the school that you went to for college?
It was all about filmmaking. So I only applied to schools with film programs. Then I knew I wanted to go to, you know, the best one I could get into, and that was USC, University of Southern California, out here in LA, and one of the best, if not the best, film schools in the world. I got in and I came out here, and that was it. I was surrounded by other people my age who wanted to make movies and wanted to make TV, and it was amazing.
Can you tell me a little bit about George Lucas in Love? That was your short film that was about like 8 minutes long, yeah? Or 8 to 9
yep.
minutes long. I remember watching it before auditioning for you for Prom, funny enough, and I really, really liked it. I have to be honest, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan. Sorry, I know that's like blasphemy right now. Oh gosh. But I thought it was so clever. It was cleverly done. So when you made the short film, what was your intent behind it? Were you trying to get attention to try to open doors?
Yeah. So while I was at SC, you know, I did the full curriculum of filmmaking that all film students do. And I made 5 very short sort of silent movies my first semester. And then you paired up with a partner and make a longer movie your second semester in it, and then your third semester you crew on a bigger project, and then it's only a 2-year program, it's the last 2 years of school for undergrads. And then in my last semester I directed a bigger project that had like a full crew of other students helping me, and that was like sound and color and all this stuff, and that was great. And so I did a lot of short films while I was at school and took a lot of other filmmaking classes, directing actors and directing for TV and directing, you know, anything with the word directing, I took it, and screenwriting classes and classes focused on editing and camera and sound and everything else. And I had a great experience, and I, you know, learned a ton from the stuff I made and the stuff I worked on and friends I helped and all that. And then after school, I started working. I got a job as an assistant. When I was working as an assistant at a production company, and I was reading scripts and doing my boss's schedule and appointments and meetings and, you know, all the stuff that assistants do. And I was sort of had a keen eye just watching who was getting attention and what directors were getting hired and what scripts were selling, and trying to just get a handle on the business and how it worked and how I could possibly get to directing and writing, you know, which was what I wanted to do. And one of the things that I saw was short films. There were always sort of these talked about short films that would make the rounds, and people like my boss, who was a development executive, would watch these shorts and consider the directors, you know, consider them for jobs directing movies. And so after 2 years of working as an assistant, I basically started to get serious about making a short film and got together with people who I had gone to film school with and started coming up with ideas. We came up with George Lucas in Love. We wrote the script. And it took a few months to finally, you know, feel like we had the resources together and pull the trigger and make the short. And so by then it had been actually close to 3 years out of school was when we finally shot it. And I wasn't actually working at the production company anymore then. By then I was working at a trailer company, a place that made trailers for movies, commercials for movies. And I was actually lucky enough to be writing and producing there. And that's when we made the short and we used their facilities for all the post-production and everything. And that's when we did George Lucas in Love. So it was 3 years out of film school, but it was with a lot of the people who I had gone to film school with and other people who I had worked with and other contacts who I had. And the idea was very simply to be one of those short films that someone like my old boss would watch and, you know, put in the VCR at the time, it was still a VHS world, and consider the director, me, for real directing jobs. That was the goal.
Oh my God, how nervous were you?
It's a great question. I mean, I was most nervous that it just wasn't going to be the right thing, you know, that people wouldn't care, or it wouldn't get the attention I wanted it to get, or somehow it would, you know, just fall through the cracks. Like, you just never know. There's lots of short films. There's lots of people trying to get noticed. But I think the bottom line is if that hadn't worked, I just would have tried something else. It's important sort of to know that it wasn't the first thing I tried. Like, you know, I made the shorts in school and that was great. And then when I got out of school, I started writing. And by the time I had done George Lucas in Love, I had also finished 3 full screenplays. I had also done a couple of what are called spec commercials, which is like a fake commercial, basically, to try to show that you can direct commercials. I had done a couple of music videos for friends' bands. So, like, I was trying everything to sort of get my foot in the door, which is, I think, what it takes. It takes a lot of trial and error and a lot of sort of endless, tireless effort in the face of rejection.
Well, how much of your work that you wrote, do you feel like you really wrote it for yourself? Or do you feel like you wrote it for a specific audience to try to sell? And is there one way that's more important? Because I know you're a huge Star Wars fan, which I admire that you went on to make that short film. But all your works previously, was it something that was also resonating with you and true to your heart? Or did you write it more for, okay, I'm hoping this will sell?
That's a great question. I feel like a lot of what I wrote was definitely trying to write what I thought would sell or what I thought people wanted. I mean, one thing is that I sort of have very mainstream taste to begin with. So I tend to like big movies and big comedies and, you know, blockbuster movies. So it's not that I was being untrue to myself. At the same time, I will say that the best scripts I've written definitely had a personal element. I mean, I think the real trick is if you can do a little bit of both. Mm. Yeah, I mean, I think you need to find your way in, even if it's just the theme underlying it all or the core underlying, you know, the idea. If there's something in there that you really care about that's really important to you, but it can be in sort of the package of the type of movie or the type of script that does have a wider appeal. I think that's the real trick. And I think that's where I've found the most success as a writer, certainly.
Okay, that's really good to know for the listeners. And for those out there who are probably mostly going to be in their mid-20s, a lot of them are changing careers and realizing, hey, I'm not thrilled with this degree that I have from my 4-year school of, who knows, business school or law school or something. And they're realizing, wow, I really have a love and passion for movies and I want to make movies. And I feel I'm really confident in knowing that I can make really great films. What kind of advice can you give them, Joe? Do you suggest that they go back to a 4-year school like the one you went to? Or are there like short spurts of classes where you can take for like a summer or an intensive or just to hit the ground running and just do it? What's your best advice?
Wow. I mean, I think it's tough. I'm a huge advocate of film school, first of all. So I think film school can be great. And it can definitely teach you a lot. It's expensive. You can definitely go into debt in a place like a real film school, a graduate film school, but you'll make amazing contacts and you'll make movies and you'll learn from good teachers and you'll connect with peers and classmates. I don't know that much about the shorter sort of film programs that aren't really full on colleges, but I'm sure there's a lot to be gained from them. I mean, I think the main thing is you really want to make stuff, then you really have to try to make stuff. There's no better way to learn than to try to go out and have a shoot day and put shots in the can, get stuff in the camera, and come home and try to cut it together and see if it works and show it to people and see if they think it works. I mean, it's an incredible learning experience, and it can be daunting and it can be frustrating, and it can also be euphoric and exciting when something works and someone watches what you've done and they laugh or they cry or they cheer or they react. But I think you have to do it and you have to see, you know, so whether that is a film program of some kind, whether that is a full-on film school, or whether that's just forcing yourself to really make stuff, you know, or write stuff, or, you know, you definitely have to go for it, which I think is a good lesson that you'll need the rest of your career anyway. Because it sort of never stops.
Yeah.
This need to really push yourself and do it and just keep churning out effort and product of some kind. It never goes away.
Okay. So that is definitely your most crucial advice for listeners. Those actionable steps would be just to go out there and make it happen. Really, I guess that's to put it in one sentence without going into like all the details. So definitely push themselves. Don't be scared. Don't hold back. Just jump. Dive in. Even if you
I
don't,
think so.
It's true. Scary as hell. It makes it so much more worth it. Like, it's so much fun at the same time if you have a really positive outlook and you see it as a learning opportunity as well.
Yeah.
Can we hear a little bit about your proudest moment in your career?
Oh, wow. The proudest moment in my career. Gosh. I mean, I certainly, you know, the whole George Lucas in Love experience, even though it was early on, it was really incredible. You know, it was such a whirlwind of attention from people I didn't expect to get attention from. It just got so much great reaction all around Hollywood and people whose names I had heard. I mean, George Lucas himself wrote a letter congratulating me on it and just, you know, really, really put me on the map with production companies and agencies and management places. And, you know, it was an incredible whirlwind. But, you know, I'm proud of, you know, every accomplishment. I mean, this business is so hard to achieve sort of anything that, you know, anytime I've had a film premiere, I've been so proud. And anytime I've been able to, you know, even just tell people, hey, a TV show I directed is on tonight, you know, it's incredible pride.
Now, contrast to that, many of us have gone through or are currently going through a spell of being in a lull.
Sure.
And I feel like this is something that everybody goes through, where we've encountered at least one time in our lives where we felt like failures, or, you know, comparing ourselves to other people, more successful people, or what our parents have accomplished when they were younger at our age. Was there a time for you that was really pretty dark and you feel like, oh shit, I don't even know if I'm going to get out of this situation, but you finally did? Was there a time like that for you that you can share with us so that we can relate?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. There have been peaks and valleys the whole time. And there's definitely been lulls and lows whenever something doesn't go the way I had hoped. And it can be depressing and it can be frustrating and it can be discouraging. And there's definitely been more than one. But probably the deepest valley was after my first film, which was Sleepover, which was over 10 years ago now. It did not perform well at the box office and it wasn't reviewed well. And it was really, really frustrating. It was my first movie. I had a lot to learn, but I worked really hard on it and I was really proud of a lot about it. A lot of people get to make their first movie. I mean, a lot of people don't get me wrong, but a lot of people get to make their first movie, but don't ever get to make a second movie. And I was convinced that was going to be me. And I didn't have any other sort of tracks that I could jump on. You know, I wasn't a writer at that point. I wasn't a TV director. You know, it was like, that was it. That was what I did. And now I wasn't going to get to do it again. And it was really hard. And I definitely went into a funk. But what I did, which is sort of what I was talking about before, is I worked myself out of it. I sat down and I started writing. And I wrote a screenplay and it came out pretty well. but it wasn't quite good enough. And I sat down and I wrote another screenplay. And this was all coming off of Sleepover. And then that one I managed to sell and got a lot of attention for it. You know, it really put me on the map as a writer suddenly. And then at the same time, I switched representation, which sometimes can be the answer and sometimes isn't. Sometimes I think people think it's going to be the answer and it's not. But for me at that point, it was. And my new manager helped me get another movie, which was really exciting. And suddenly things were looking up again. That's not to say that things haven't gone up and down since then as well, because they have. But, you know, one thing now is like, I feel like I have a lot more, I don't know what the best word is, avenues or tracks or various things I can do. I can write, I can work in TV, I can work in movies. And so when there's a lull, you try to just fill it by, at least I try to fill it by concentrating on what else I can make happen, what other things I can be pushing towards.
Yeah, that's really inspiring. And I am a little curious. So you're saying between that lull from after Sleepover to the time that you wrote that other script, that you actually got yourself to get out of that block, about how long was that, would you say? Was that like a few months, a few weeks?
No, it was long. I mean, it was long. It was longer than that. It was over a year.
That's, you know, I think that's amazing. And thank you for being so honest about that, because I feel like so many people go through lulls for a long time, like years, you know, more than a year and a half. It's scary because when you get to that point, it's just like, what's the point of even bothering to take another step? If, no matter how long or how short, it's just so important to push yourself and take that first step like you did to get back in writing, you know? And I think that our listeners can take a lot from that. And I know I am. Thank you for being so honest about that. I think that's really amazing because it's like so much more relatable and gives us motivation and inspiration whenever we're feeling down, you know?
Yeah. And the amazing thing is that Sleepover was my first movie, but I directed three more. I didn't end up being someone who only made one. And I sold that script that I wrote, the second one after Sleepover. And then, you know, I sold another script and I got hired to do other rewrites. And then I ended up working in TV as well and have directed almost 20 episodes of TV now in the last couple of years and wrote for TV as well. So it definitely opened things up. And like I said, even since then, it hasn't been a straight shot up. It's been lots of ups and downs since then as well. But it definitely taught me that they are weatherable. And I can definitely say that none of the valleys were as long or as deep as that one afterward, and I think partially because of what I learned.
Yeah, there's so much that you've done with writing, and I know you love directing as well. So for people who want to become directors, do you advise that it's important that you do write a lot of your own work rather than just focusing on being strictly solely the director? Because it sounds like you can carry a lot of that, your writer's work, into your work as a director. I feel like it gives it more depth and more flavors and colors. How do you feel about that?
I think the thing about writing is you can have more control of your destiny just because you can always sit down and write.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas directing, it takes a lot more sort of alignment of resources and opportunities to really get behind the camera. So, you know, I've directed lots of stuff that I haven't written, and I love it. And I love working with great writers because I feel like they're going to have ideas and voice, you know, dialogue and scenes and voices that I would never think of or be able to conjure up in my own head. And so I'm excited to hear and see them and try to put them on film. But just being someone who understands story and who can write is, I think, huge as a director. I don't think there's any director in working today who doesn't have a writing ability of some kind, even if they never type a word, you know, they know it, you know, it's storytelling. That's what directing is. So they really, really go hand in hand.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously a lot of directors write what they're directing completely. I don't really need to do that. And I'm perfectly happy to, more than happy to take someone's great script and get to direct it. And that's what's been fun with a lot of the TV stuff. But yeah, they certainly are a matched set of skills.
And I could see that. I could totally see that. It's funny because it kind of reminds me of actors when they were like, oh, that's a triple threat. But it's like so many of them are like a lot of, I don't know that many actors who can't sing and can't dance and act at the same time. So now it's like it's become merged as one.
Right.
You know, when you think actor, it's like, okay, well, they must be amazing at singing and at dancing as well. So it kind of It's that's kind of similar in the same type of approach where it's like, okay, director, amazing director. I would also assume, oh, I bet he can really write a mean script if he wanted to sit down and do it, you know?
Yeah.
What's one thing that really excites you in your work right now that makes you get up every morning and you're like, yes, I'm so energized right now and I can't wait to do this blank. Like, what is it that gets you out of bed and it's like, yeah, I'm so excited to conquer the world today?
I guess I think just my TV directing career in general has been such an exciting whirlwind the last few years, just doing really funny stuff and working with great actors and working with really cool people. One show that I did a lot of episodes of is this show called Awkward. And the showrunner on that is this woman, Lauren Unerick, who's a friend of mine. And just working with her is something that excites me, and working with the rest of her team. And it's like, we have just this great relationship where we get excited about the same material. And she's getting ready to shoot a pilot right now. And it's something that, you know, hopefully if it goes a series, I'll be involved with. And like, I guess just working with good people is what...
Just collaborating with like-minded people.
Yeah, collaborating with smart, funny people is something that definitely gets me excited and gets me raring to go.
That's awesome. Let's talk a little bit more about personal life, because that always interests me. What is the proudest moment in your personal life?
I mean, I have a great kid, you know.
Leo,
and
I love him. Yeah. He's so cute.
He's doing great. I mean, there's lots of little moments. Anytime he conquers something or is able to master something new, he was a little late in talking. And when he finally got the hang of sentences, like, that was an incredibly proud moment for me. And just really anything he accomplishes is definitely a super proud moment for me.
Kids get big so quickly. Oh, yeah. My God. He's so cute. It's ridiculous. I remember you bringing him on set. Oh my gosh, I just wanted to nibble his cheeks all the time. He's so cute. So how do you keep a balanced life though? It's like, you have an amazing wife, Abby. She's so sweet, so kind, and she seems so supportive. So that's a blessing to
she
have.
She is, yeah.
You know, I remember during prom when you were working on it, like, you guys didn't really even see each other that much at that time because you were so focused on
preparing.
Do you remember that? Like, I that's something that stood out to me. I was like, damn, that's crazy, because I was young, I was early 20s, and I was still learning how to balance my life, and I didn't really have like serious relationships yet. So that always fascinated me. I was like, wow, that's a beautiful relationship where it's like, okay, you go off and do your thing and she respects your space, and you can fully immerse yourself into what it is that you love to do, knowing that she'll still be there.
I mean, I think it just has to do with who we are and how we relate, for sure. We've always been able to sort of do our own thing, but also be together as well and give each other space. We've never been really needy about each other's time, which is nice. But the other thing too is, like, you know, you saw me, of course, in the thick of it.
Yes.
In pre-production and production on prom, when, you know, I would go long days and hours without seeing her. But there are other times, you know, in the lulls and the times between projects where we're together all day, every day, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like that we never feel that pressure, you know. She doesn't work, which is nice. She stays home with Leo.
Thank you for sharing that. I always love hearing about how those family balancing and juggling and all that stuff works, because I feel like I can take that, like, little nuggets of wisdom and apply it to my own life. I love hearing that. So thank you for sharing something so personal.
Sure, of course.
So I also, because this year I've been doing a lot of self-discovery and growing, and I went to Burning Man, and I feel like that really changed me and my perspective. I know it's kind of like, I'm pretty sure you did not expect me when you first met me at prom to go to something like Burning Man, but I'm so glad I did, and it was such an amazing experience.
How cool.
And it changed my perspective on a lot of things and other really interesting events similar to Burning Man. Now, I wanted to know, for you, was there an experience or an event that changed your life or your perspective in a positive way that maybe you can share with the listeners and even recommend to the listeners to check out? Like,
you know, for me, I think one of the most formative experiences, you mentioned camping trip. Like, I went to summer camp my whole childhood, and that was huge for me. The sort of independence of it, and this particular camp I went to was a real place that I feel like gave kids and young adults a chance to just really grow and lead and work together. And like, I ended up working there for 3 years as a camp counselor and as like a unit head and stuff like that. And I think it just really shaped sort of two of the most important things in my career, which is leading. It definitely definitely help with all kinds of leadership skills and techniques, and then working with others. And those are sort of the two most important things, I think, in my filmmaking career, like how I work with others. And so it's not one moment that someone can go do, but definitely summer camp was a big thing for me.
That's so important for kids to have. I never went to a summer camp. I went to one, but it was like a super nerdy one for like people who did well for SATs. And so I was there literally like studying toxicology at like 13, 14 years old. So that was not much of a camp experience. But obviously we know Leo will be going to a lot of summer camps.
Oh yeah.
Every summer, oh, yeah. Absolutely. What are a few personal habits that you feel really contributes to your success? I know you mentioned a little bit about your leadership skills. How about let's talk a little bit more about that.
When it comes to the way I lead, it's like I try to listen to everyone. You know, I try to never dismiss an idea out of hand. I really believe that my career has been helped tremendously by collaborating. It's not something I have to fake. I want to hear people's ideas. I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be great. I think they're going to make my work better. That's definitely something I do. I try not to get too emotional or overwhelmed. I try to keep an even keel, which is probably one of the harder things to do for me. But when you can do it, it definitely serves you well. I think probably my best habit is just a strong work ethic. I love this quote or this little story that Judd Apatow tells about early in the business where he was doing stand-up. I may not even get this story right, but it's a great, what I remember of it is a great story. This is the version I remember, that he was doing stand-up and another comic, a more successful comic, came to him and said, you know, I like your act and I like your material. I think you could write jokes for me. And this is normal, by the way. Not every stand-up writes all their own jokes. He was like, you know, why don't you write some jokes for me? And if I use them, I'll pay you. And Apatow was like, really? He's like, yeah, why don't you go home, write 10 jokes, bring them to me tomorrow, and any ones that I use in my act, I'll give you money. And so Apatow came back the next day and handed the guy 100 jokes.
Damn.
And that is like the perfect story for me about what it takes to make it in this business.
Yes.
If someone says write 10 jokes, you write 100. I thought I would sit down after sleepover and write a screenplay and that would solve my problems. But it wasn't until I wrote a second screenplay that it got me back on track. You know what I mean? It took two. It took sitting down for 3 months writing a 100-page screenplay and sitting down for 3 months and writing another 100. Be prepared is another, you know, for Boy Scouts. But it's like, it's another huge thing. I don't care how many things I've directed. I always do a full shot list. Even if I'm not going to use it, I always do it. I always know the script inside and out. I always ask a million questions until I have the answers I need so I know what I'm going to be doing on set. But it's like preparation, work ethic, and listening to everyone's voices around me. Those are three traits that I'm definitely proud of.
Yeah.
And I think have served me well.
And how important do you think it is to share your vision and goals with people around you? And do you think in any way, let's say for the listeners who are interested in wanting to become a filmmaker, director, writer, do you think in order to speed up their goals, that sharing their vision with people around them would help expedite that process, basically?
You know, in an unpretentious sort of way, yeah. I mean, I don't think everyone always wants to hear you spouting your dreams every second. But, you know, you should know what your goals are and you should be serious about getting to them and finding ways to get there. And I guess if you're going to go around sort of announcing your goals to everyone, make sure you're also listening to what they have to say.
Yes,
you know?
I agree.
So you're not just, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. It's like, and what are you, you know, what are we going to do together? What can we do?
Exactly.
What are you trying to do? How can I help you? You know, I think the more you can help other people. You know, I'm not sure I totally believe in karma. I certainly don't think you should only help people in order to get them to help you back. But I do think that there's just something that's created in you when you help other people that it just fosters good things. Like I said, I don't really believe in karma. I don't believe the universe is paying you back in some automatic way. But I just think helping other people towards what they're trying to accomplish can only be a good thing for you. It's going to teach you something. It's going to show you something. Someone's going to notice.
It's literally like working with a mentor when you think about it. And the mentors, like what they're getting out of it is that they might be learning something about themselves, but they're giving so much, the mentee. And they're doing it out of good intention. They're not doing it to get something back. That's why I really admire mentors out there who are dedicating their time and resources, emotional support. Have you ever had a mentor in your life, in your career, or even your personal life, where you feel like they kind of could substitute or act as a mentor to you, where you looked up to them and has helped you a lot with your life?
You know, it's interesting. I saw that question on the list of things you're going to ask about, and I was like,
yeah.
My first thought was, wow, Maybe I should have had a mentor all this time. Because I don't think I ever really had an official one, but I'm very big on sort of peers who sort of serve as mentors. I definitely have great relationships and friendships with people who are close to me, who I work with. We bounce ideas around, and like, they're not mentors in that one day I could be mentoring them and one day they could be mentoring me. It's more like a peer relationship. Mm-hmm. But there have definitely been these important people who've helped me and listened to me and found ways to help me achieve what I need. But and then I've been able to do the same for them. It's been more of a peer thing throughout my career, which has served me really well.
Who was the best person that you've ever worked for? I guess best is not really the right word, but who's somebody that you worked for that you learned so much from? And why were they so good at what they were doing?
Probably Lauren. It's probably my friend who created Awkward. Just directing episodes for her and serving on the writing staff in the writer's room under her, and just watching how she approaches story and how she just always pushes for something better, and the way she looks at performance and just the way things need to pop and the way things need to be exciting and be there and not be flat and not be straight and not settle for anything. And it was very inspiring. And I wrote a script. I wrote one of the scripts for Awkward Season 3, and I turned in my first draft, you know, and she thought it needed work. And one of the things she said to me was, she's like, no one ever says, hi, how are you? You know, if someone's going to open their mouth, they're going to say something insightful or funny or flip or interesting or new or unexpected. Go back, work through all this dialogue. If they're going to say something, it's going to be worth it. There's no filler. And I was just like, oh, that's so great. That's such a great
advice.
Piece of writing advice. And it really pushed me. And it's something that I've thought about in subsequent scripts I've written for other things. And yeah, so she's definitely someone who I learned a ton from.
For those who are interested in becoming filmmakers, directors, even writers, I know you mentioned, like we agreed, it's really important just to jump in and dive into what it is that you love to do and take risks. That is very true. But I feel like that's very also overwhelming for them, because it sounds like, oh, that might take a lifetime to do for some people. Are there any maybe small manageable steps that you can advise them to take every week towards fulfilling their path?
I don't think the advice about just doing it has to be that risky. Get a screenwriting program and sit down and start writing something. That's not risky. That's not scary. I mean, it might be scary. You know, it might be hard, but it's not taking your life into your hands. It's like, you know, write something. Take your time, but write something, and, you know, give yourself goals. You know, use a screenwriting book. Follow a method if you want, if you can. You know, and try to finish a screenplay. That's a huge thing.
What book would you recommend for those?
I mean, I like the Save the Cat books.
Right, Blake Snyder.
Yeah, I like Blake Snyder. A lot of people swear by, it's called screenplay, right? You know, that I don't think has to be scary. And you don't have to show anyone until you're ready. But write that and then grab, you know, a video camera and shoot a scene. Write a scene, shoot it with some friends. Try to cut it together on your iMovie or Final Cut. And then show it to people and see if they get it. See what they say. That doesn't have to be that big a risk. That doesn't have to cost much money.
Now, what if those people around them are friends and family and they actually really like it?
Great.
But you also know friends and family are usually pretty biased. So what would you suggest after that? Let's say they already passed the first round where those people that they know love it. What do you suggest right after that?
The big thing, and I sort of talked about this with the mentor question, is you have to develop a peer group of people who are trying to do what you do. This is one of the reasons that when I talk to people entering the business, I always say, like, get a day job in the industry. A lot of times it's easy to think, well, if I just worked at a coffee shop or if I just worked at such and such a place, I'd have even more time to write on nights and weekends and make short films with friends, because industry jobs are really taxing. They're really long. You know, being an assistant at a production company or being a PA, by the time you get home at the end of the day, you just want to collapse, you know?
Yeah.
But I always advise against getting a day job outside the business, because I think what you get, first, you get two things when you have a day job in the business, and they're both enormously valuable. One is you actually see how it works. So you're in it. You get it. You're not some outsider where it's still magical. You see how scripts move through town and what sells when and how and what gets made and why and what gets picked up and what doesn't and all that stuff, especially if you can work at like an agency or a management company or a production company or a studio, really anywhere. You'll see the sort of flow, whether it's TV or movies, whichever one you're focusing on. You'll see the flow of how the business works. But just as importantly, every other assistant on that floor with you or in that mailroom or every other PA or whomever they are, they want to do what you want to do. Now that can be daunting, but more importantly, you guys will kick ideas around. You know, I can't tell you how many writing partnerships form between two assistants who talk about movie ideas and end up being writing partners, or how many filmmaking relationships form that way. You know, hey, I'm shooting something this weekend. You want to come help out? Sure. Can I show you this idea I have? Can I show you the script I wrote? And that's where you don't get the friends and family bias, hopefully. But you get people who can say, you know, this isn't working, or this is good, but this isn't, and give you real notes and give you real feedback. And, you know, I think it's important to have a real peer group of people who you trust and who are trying to do what you're trying to do, and you can help each other out. And that is what I've had for almost 20 years. And it's been great. It's been huge.
Oh, I love hearing that. Thank you for that. Because I feel like that's not only so motivating, but that really creates this more loving environment, this community of kind of like family.
Yeah.
You know, you're part of this tribe. You know you're all in it together. It's creating a really warm environment. And I love that. That's what I love about collaborating. And I love that you're really emphasizing the importance about getting together with your coworker or, you know, the other assistant next to you. And I think that's a fantastic way of encouraging listeners to just get in it. And I think you provided a lot of amazing, actionable steps for them to do. And yeah, I thank you so much for that. I do want to know this one thing, since I am in my mid-20s.
Sure.
If you could turn back time and relive your mid-20s, what would you do differently? What advice would you give to your, let's say, 27-year-old self?
So when I was 27, you know, I had just made George Lucas in Love, and so I was definitely riding high. I think I was maybe a little quick to dismiss certain things that were put in front of me. And it was sort of very unique to my experience that I did a short film that was so well received, got so much attention, which of course I'm not saying is a bad thing, it was a great thing. But I think that maybe I thought I had the pick of the litter a little bit too much, and I should have considered certain projects a little bit differently, you know. And then a couple years later, it took me 4 years to make a movie after George Lucas in Love, which sounds like nothing in retrospect, you know, wasn't very long. But at the time, it felt long. And I think that if I had sort of looked at things a little differently, I could have probably done something a little sooner and maybe started things off on a slightly different trajectory. But again, that's very unique to my experience. So I don't know how helpful that is for everyone.
That is helpful, though. Well, thank you so much. This is an amazing interview. And before we head off, do you have any recommended books that you'd love for our listeners to check out? And I know you mentioned Blake Snyder, Save the Cat. It's a very popular book. I love that. So is there a book like that, or movies?
I think it's just movies that I love that can be inspiring. You know, like for me, Annie Hall is always a great go-to when I want to just be re-inspired with great comedy and stamp on the world and a totally different view of the world that someone, a filmmaker, put out there, and it just worked 100%.
Thank you, Joe.
Hey, Storyteller Tribe. I hope Joe's episode motivated you to just get up and go shoot that script that you've been thinking about for a while. If you'd like to thank Joe or want to say hi, be sure to find him on Twitter at Joey Nuss. That's JoeyNuss. A huge thank you to Joe for being so awesome and so candid. For links to the books and resources that were brought up in Joe's interview, be sure to head over to Joe's show notes page at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/JoeNussbaum. That's JoeNussBaum. By the way, it would make my day to hear how this episode has helped you, so head on over to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram and find me at 88 Cups of Tea. It means so much to me to be able to share my episodes with you, so if you connected to this interview in any way, please help me leave a rating and review for my podcast. Ratings and reviews on my podcast iTunes page helps a lot in spreading the word about the podcast. The more ratings and reviews I receive, the more you're helping me with the ranking of my show. That means there's a higher chance of my podcast being found and subscribed to, and that would mean the world to me. To leave a review, launch Apple's podcast app, then tap on the search button, enter 88 Cups of Tea, then after you see my podcast album art, tap on the reviews button in the middle. Be sure to sign into the iTunes store by logging in with your password, then tap the stars to leave a rating, then enter the title and then the content, and you're all set to go. Thank you so much in advance for helping me out and leaving me a review and rating.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.